All right, folks, buckle up. We're back. Week 7 was crazy. Mountain West Wire podcast here, MWCWire.com. We got a lot to talk about today. Myself, Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennerly, MWCWire.com. I already said that, right? Once, I guess. I'm excited.
You can never say it enough.
Join us at MWCWire.com, Twitter, Facebook. Just search Mountain West Wire. You'll find us. And that voice you heard is, are you ecstatic? A big victory for your Bulldogs there.
Much bigger than I anticipated.
I don't think anybody anticipated that type of victory.
That's true. But then again, there was a lot of things this week that nobody anticipated.
This is why you love college football, right? Because it never happened throughout there. You go, okay, you got two ranked teams beat. Like USC loses to Washington State. You got a couple of games here at the bottom of the rankings. Memphis beats UCLA. But then it started Friday afternoon. Depending where you're at in the country, Friday. Number 2 Clemson versus crappy old Syracuse at the Carrier Dome. Well, let's see what happened over the weekend, Matt. We got Clemson losing number 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have an order here. Washington State scored 3 points versus Cal. And how did Tim Drewder prepare that defense against Washington State? What's up with that? That was never at Fresno, ever.
Well, you know, for first year or two, maybe. But yeah, I think maybe we're, I think it's pretty clear maybe he's just better suited to be a defensive coordinator at this point.
Well, yeah, look what he did at Air Force before when they had a really good defense. He was their DC there too. But yeah, that loss to, what was Washington State, 8 at the time?
Yes, they were.
So then what happened Saturday morning? I'm trying to get more organized here. You get the scoreboard up. So who lost next? Ranked teams counting as we go here. It's 2.
Okay, so I'm assuming it's most, well, actually it's in ranking order. It's not by chronological order.
That's fine.
But, you know, obviously Washington, the Huskies, lost last night. And, you know, everybody's already saying the Pac-12 may have already played themselves out of the playoff. Auburn lost with a 20-0 lead over LSU.
Who lost to Troy, by the way.
Yeah, Miami just barely escaped Georgia Tech at number 11. Oklahoma had a really, you know, rough and tumble Red River rivalry against Texas. They barely escaped.
Weren't they up 20-0 and almost lost?
They were, I think, yeah.
And then you got Utah USC. I'm watching that game. I'm like, come on. All right, backup quarterback. They're up 21-7. They got this. And then,
Indiana kind of gave away their upset bid against Michigan.
Hey, don't overlook Wisconsin, Purdue. They only beat Purdue 17-9.
Yeah, and then Michigan State had a really close call against Minnesota. Texas Tech lost. Navy lost. Lots of very close escapes for some teams and, you know, losses for others.
Like San Diego State, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a week where there's always one of these weeks where, a couple top 10 teams lose. But wasn't it 4 total that lost this weekend? What, Clemson?
No, it was
7 top 10 teams lost?
Or no, I thought you were talking about top 25 teams. But yeah, it was 4 top 10 teams.
So this rarely happens. It's crazy, like this type of stuff. Then the Mountain West, so we'll kind of go through the standings and stuff too. So obviously we mentioned San Diego State lost over the weekend. We'll get to those games in a moment. We'll go in our normal order. But standing-wise, you tweeted out, Fresno State is first place in the West Division, right? Is that correct? Am my eyes correct on this, 3-0?
Your eyes do not deceive you. They are 3-0 in the conference, and they're outscoring opponents 106-31 so far.
You mentioned that, 10 points a game. That's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
And then you got, well, I guess what else we got? San Diego State, they're obviously, we already mentioned them. The only team overall I think where we expected them to be is probably just Colorado State. Maybe, yeah, just CSU at 3-0 in conference play. That's it. Everybody else, sort of unexpected to be where they're at.
I mean, I think maybe I had a little more confidence in Boise State than you did. Obviously, I didn't think they would beat San Diego State, which we'll get to at some point in the podcast. But, you know, I kind of thought they'd be in the mix. I think the biggest surprise from the undefeated teams left in the Mountain Division, definitely Wyoming.
I mean, that Utah State-Wyoming game. We'll kind of sprinkle in some stuff here, but that first pick for Josh Allen, holy crap, that was awful. That was like the worst pass I've ever seen. Like, what are you doing? He throws a bad pass. They hold off for victory, but the way they've been playing versus Oregon, versus Iowa, and the other games they played, they're sitting at 4-2. But look at Air Force. They came back against where were they down 27-0? I think I read the stat somewhere. The second team this year in FBS versus FBS to come back from a 27-point deficit and become victorious. Mm-hmm. I forget the other team. I don't remember, but like I tweeted, that's the UNLV defense we know, right?
We'll get to that.
And then, what? Anything else really quick? Standings. San Jose State lost. And by the way, we're both correct in San Jose State a little bit about Tim not mentioning Josh Love, about a quarterback. And then, hey, Nevada, why aren't you playing Ty Gainsey week one? Come on. Told you, right?
We'll talk a little bit more about that once we start jumping into the games.
Anything else? Should we get to games now? Or to tweets, right? We want some tweets, right? How people are doing?
Yeah, we tried to gauge, maybe play the online therapist for some teams out there. But we wanted to know, how are you feeling about your team on Sunday morning?
It's a mixed bag, right? Obviously.
It is a mixed bag, yes.
I'll start this one from Jordan_Eck. Utah State needs a QB change, maybe a coaching change too, which could be accurate after Jordan Love came in and didn't play much better than Kent Myers. So We got that. What else we got, Matt?
Let's see. I'm trying to scroll down a little bit here. There was somebody, I forget the screen name, who their only reply was a bunch of like vomit faces.
Aztec fan,
like,
perhaps?
Or like green vomit faces, yeah.
Yeah, sick face. I assume that's Aztec fan. We also got some guy replied with a safety dance because we did have a safety that Wyoming gave. Our good buddy Thor Stevenson. Yeah, Thor's always interacting on Twitter. Who else we got? Here's one for Fresno fan, Patrick Hoffman. Big Kurt Hoffman on Twitter. He didn't quote tweet, So he didn't follow directions, but we'll still give him a shout out.
No, I said you could reply.
Oh, okay. I just saw quote tweet. Okay. He mentions, when someone tells you it can't be done, it's more a reflection of their limitations, not yours. The Dogs defense looked amazing last night, which they did. Shut down the Lobos rushing attack to basically nothing. What else we got here? Nevada saying, impressive despite a loss. Future looks bright for Matthew MW. I like this Twitter, MW_tax law. Do we need to get him for tax purposes, perhaps? Give him a call?
Perhaps. Make sure our guacamole money's in order.
Exactly. We need somebody in charge, right? What else we got? let's see here. I'm trying to scroll through as well. The Force Awakens from our good buddy fake Matt Mummy, who also crushed last week on fantasy football in our college edition. So, sorry, Matt, but we beat Matt. There you go. But he's excited. Force Awakens, that's a pretty good one. I guess Star Wars, let's last year and a half ago, but still relevant, right? That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else I'm missing? We got the Ski Wookie. That's the one you're thinking of.
Well, Kyle Atkinson, 13, said he felt pretty good about the Cowboys. Ugly, but a win is a win.
Yeah, the D. There it is. D something special. All right. Can never count Allen out. Well, I sort of have. So I'm just saying that first pick, awful. Colorado State fans expected this from N. Haas there. So a lot of different responses. A lot of good stuff going on. Right. Should we get to the games now? I guess.
Let's do it.
We got the shout outs. All right, here we go. Game recaps. And as I don't have my schedule in front of me, let's start with Air Force.
The first game of the day was Air Force. UNLV.
I heard a Cam Newton reference in the broadcast again.
Uh huh.
Why is that still happening? Why is that a thing?
Well, you know, he did look pretty good in the first half. As did the rest of the UNLV offense.
But then they went home, or something happened.
Well, I mean, what happened is, you know, Air Force was basically able to flip the script in the second half. Like, if you look at the numbers of the game, you know, what actually happened is that Air Force ended up outgaining UNLV as far as total offense. But, you know, if you look at it, it's basically a tale of two halves, where in the first half especially, you know, UNLV was right on it. You know, they had over 300 yards in the first half. And, you know, they had, you know, a 2-1 yardage advantage over Air Force. And then after halftime, Air Force basically had a 3-1 yardage advantage. And, you know, I think the biggest difference was probably Rodgers himself, because in that first half, he was 7-13 for 107 yards. You know, he was a big reason they were able to move the ball both with his arm and with his feet. And he just didn't get it done in the second half. You know, he was only 5-14. The Rebels were 0-6 on third downs after halftime. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it's going to be a loss, I think, that this team's going to feel for a while. you know, you can call it a learning experience for someone like Rodgers, who's, you know, all things considered, is still a redshirt freshman, still has a lot of promise in front of him. But this was just an instance where he didn't make enough plays when they needed to.
And yeah, and he ran for him and Worthman, quarterbacks, 148 to 166. Yeah, I remember the one first half run, he like carried like six guys to like the 1 yard line on Air Force defenders. He moved the ball well on the ground, but mm-hmm. like you said, his second half passing wasn't very good. Air Force figured something out. Worthman had five touchdowns in the game, which he'll probably be, I'm assuming, player of the week. I take a quick look, but anytime you get five touchdowns, that's the case. Like, Rodgers looked okay, like I said, the first half, but Lexington Thomas still had 91 yards for them. They had big plays. They ran the ball well. It's just that they put all their numbers were there in the first half. Second half, because I kind of tuned away from it because I'm seeing, okay, they're up 27-0, 27-7. Nicely late in the third quarter, start of the fourth. I'm like, oh, it's a game. Just like Air Force New Mexico last week, where Air Force was down. Then they tried to make a big comeback. And it didn't happen. But again, like you said, Rodgers, he only completed 5 second half passes. He only went down the field once. Had that, and the only long reception was a Lexington Thomas pass. I'm assuming that was a short pass to the running back. So he had no downfield threat against his Air Force secondary. And that's something you got to take advantage of, just because you can't just throw a short pass for 10 yards every time.
And I mean, I think another thing that might get overlooked is that it might sound kind of odd to say, they didn't take full advantage of all the opportunities that were given to them. Because, you know, for as well as the offense played in the first half, the defense played really well in that first half too. And they forced 4 Air Force turnovers. Do you want to know how many points they had off those turnovers?
0, I'm betting.
No, that was
I'm just saying.
It
I'm
wasn't
saying
quite that bad. But, they forced 4 turnovers in the game, and they only got 10 points out of it.
Yeah, okay. I was just going to be facetious there. I knew it wasn't many. Wasn't all first? Yeah, it was all first half points, I believe, too.
Well, it was right. There were 2 of them in the first half, and 2 of them, there was a turnover on downs in the first half. So if you want to include that, you could say they forced 5 turnovers. But, you know, after the turnover on downs, they only managed a field goal. After the first fumble, that was when they got their only touchdown off of a turnover. And then the 3 fumbles that Air Force had after that, you know, you had drives starting at the 43, the 20, and the 42 on Air Force's side of the field, and they got 3 points. That's just not going to be done.
And consider the onside kick they did.
Oh, yeah.
Onside kick, only go 4 yards for a field goal. So there's, it's kind of like, not to go back to the Howard game, but was it like their first 3 or 4, a high percentage of possessions ended up in field goals and not touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So they're up 14-0 going for the kill. They still got points of it. Still a gutsy play call to do that early, and they still got points out of it, but they're sitting at the inside the 10, and they only get it, like you said there, like, look at this position. Like, they could have been up 28-0 before, because they get to the 6-yard line, kick a field goal. The turnover on downs you mentioned, get a field goal, and that was sitting at, it could have been a touchdown. I'm not saying get a touchdown, but you're that close. You stop Air Force in that deep in the territory and only go, they do have a good drive, 7 plays, 45 yards, but again, you get to the 10-yard line. And then there's the fumble. They could have been at the half 35-7 or something like that. A lot more points. They love points on the board.
Yeah, and then, you know, in the same way where Air Force really struggled to kind of keep the chains moving in the first half, you know, that I think is a credit to UNLV's really young defense. And, you know, they got guys who are going to grow into what I think they're going to be pretty good players. Like Farrell Hester, for example, he got his first start, I believe, last week. And he was already out there leading the team in tackles. And he was one of those guys who was credited with a forced fumble. He's a freshman. You know, he's going to be the kind of guy that this defense can build around in the long run. But if you look at what Air Force was able to do in the first half, you know, this was when UNLV was really forcing them, you know, into, you know, punting situations. Because in the first half, they were they were 1 of 5 on third downs in the first half and 1 of 2 on fourth downs. But after halftime, they were 5 and 7 and 2 of 2. And those are the kinds of plays where if you really look at what they were able to do, they just couldn't get Air Force off the field.
Yeah, they could, like, look in the second half drives, like after the first, like, again, missed opportunities, fumble, punt, fumble, field goal, Air Force fumble twice there, obviously. Then Air Force has a 10-play touchdown drive. Then they go have another 11-play touchdown drive. They're down 3 points. They fumble it on a 10-play drive, but UNLV fumbles right back to mm-hmm. give them a touchdown. So a lot of long drives on there, but it's Air Force teams not – like, they come back, that's great, but they haven't been consistent this year. They've been doing this too often versus New Mexico. They had to do the same type of thing. They start, but then they play close to San Diego State, have a big lead. They play both ends. They'll get up big or get up a decent amount and give it up, like Aztecs a little bit. That monsoon game's a bit different, but both teams will be good. But this is also Air Force's first victory over an FBS team.
That's true.
And they're sitting at 2-4, and I don't know if we don't need to get to bowl stuff now, but it's like, I thought if UNLV wins, they could get a bowl game, but they're sitting at 2-4, maybe. Nevada's looking way better, so that's not a guarantee. At CSU, maybe Army. At Utah State, probably. It's going to be close to the Air Force if they're going to make a bowl game. They still have half the season left, but I don't know if they can go 4-2 the rest of the way.
You know, I think if they can hold on to their defensive gains, because, you know, we kind of knew going in what UNLV was going to want to do. They were going to want to run the football. And they showed in the second half that they could stop the run a little bit. So if they could hang on to that, that I think makes them a really interesting team going forward, because, you know, Nevada kind of runs the ball in fits and starts. They get to play next week. But then after that, you get Colorado State and Army and Wyoming. So I guess we'll see.
It'll be interesting here. All right, next game. Should we go? What's next on the list? Actually, is it
Utah? That would be the battle for Bridger's rifle.
Yeah, I've been to Fort Bridger.
Which, according to the broadcast on Facebook, they were asking the announcers were trying to explain why these two teams play for a rifle, and apparently the guy said something to the effect of, "Well, there was a guy named Bridger, and he had a rifle." Spot on presentation there.
Where's your research, buddy? Jim Bridger, he is a kind of a frontier explorer type guy who, there's a reason it's named Fort Bridger. It's right on the border of Utah and Wyoming, where, for those who are from where I'm at, people are familiar with Park City, the ski resorts, everything, you mm-hmm. go through there. There's the Wyoming's right near, not too far beyond there. You pass over this town called Evanston, and then you're a good 20 miles out there, and there's this thing, place called Fort Bridger, where they do some sort of festival every year. My brother had some restaurant food truck thing, so I'd help him out years ago. Spend a week over Labor Day, make some good money. But it's like the Fort Bridger. So he's like an explorer guy through Wyoming and Utah. That's who he is. He was part of Utah and part of Wyoming from where he discovered, because the border of Utah and where Fort Bridger is reasonably close. So that's a better explanation without me even looking it up. And they had time to do so. But for the yeah, thank you. But for the game itself, Josh Allen's first pass, not so good. Terrible interception. I'm like, is this going to happen again? Terrible interception on the first drive. Is Utah State going to take advantage and do anything and score some points? They got a field goal out of it, but that's about it.
Well, and let's not discredit Allen too much, because, you know, first throw, not great. On the game, though, pretty decent. You know, 18 of 26, 208 yards, and a touchdown after that first interception.
Not bad. But yeah, it's just like when I saw it, I'm like, is this going to happen again? Where he's just terrible, Josh Allen making dumb plays, because it was a play where he was sort of trying to throw it away, but he didn't do a good job throwing it away. He threw it to the sideline, but it's still too much in. It's like you're rolling and rolling, just chuck it, just make sure it goes beyond the line of scrimmage, because I think he was still in the pocket area, and so just throw it as far as you can downfield. It's like, come on, you don't need to needle it down the sideline to hit the GA on the GA or something. Just throw it out of bounds, get it past the marker, and don't keep it in play. Give them zero chance to catch a ball you're trying to throw away.
Yeah, I mean, on the whole, like, it wasn't a great game for the Wyoming offense. Like, by a lot of metrics, there were kind of in fits and starts. And actually, Utah State, by the slimmest of margins, actually beat them as far as yards per play. You know, they outgained them as far as raw yardage. There was 363 for the Aggies and 293 for the Cowboys. But, you know, they also ran more plays, too, so it ended up being 4.8 per for Utah State and 4.7 for Wyoming. So, like, you know, they didn't really get the running game going, which is not great. You know, Trey Woods had 15 carries, only 40 yards. They did have some nice chunk plays down the field every so often. C.J. Johnson had his lone catch was a 28-yard touchdown. James Price had a couple of nice long catches. But this game wasn't really about the Wyoming offense. It was about the defense.
Yeah, that, and like we said before, the defense is going to be better than the offense. Like, look at what they did against because they had Kent Myers. They brought in Jordan Love to play quarterback who three picks.
Not good.
Kent Myers did okay, like only 94 yards, but he wasn't turning the ball over but not scoring either. But, like, look at what the defense – and that does include three picks plus two fumbles they gave up as well. So, was that right? Five total turnovers, the Wyoming defense forced, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's interesting. The Wyoming's defense is good. When Andrew Wingard leads your team in tackles of 15, that's kind of a lot for a DB to get that. But they had – they were getting after Love and every and Myers. They had seven TFLs, three sacks, a couple QB hurries, which I think the two is generous or not enough. They should have had more than that, I believe, if I recall. But their defense just stopped them at will. And Utah State, they're talking about running game, like what they're going to do. I mentioned last week, maybe El Toro Allen's on the outs. He did. He only had one run. It is LaJuan Hunt being the main guy. 73 yards isn't terrible. It's not bad, 18 for 73. But the defense, Utah State was never comfortable watching them pass or run the ball. The only play they had, did you see the end-around wide receiver pass?
I did.
Maybe Aaron Vaughn should be the next quarterback because that was right on the money for a pass.
We're seeing a lot of that recently.
Yeah, and it was a good pass, too. It wasn't a little floater where the guy's wide open. It was he had to get it over the far shoulder and above the DB, and he got it right there. Perfect catch for a touchdown, the 29-yarder to Roberts there, Braylon Roberts. But you're right, the defense, well, I mean, outside of that, that's like the only – I know they scored 23 points, but – five turnovers? Come on. Wyoming probably should have won by more points.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think it's also more fair to say that Utah State maybe kind of gave this game away because, like, we know their special teams are pretty good. Dominic Eberle might be the best kicker in the conference. You know, I think he's up to 13 of 14 on the year, and he was 3 for 3 yesterday, including a long 49. So they were putting him in position to succeed, and he was able to kind of convert those opportunities. But I mean, I feel like this is the kind of situation where you kind of feel bad for the defense because, you know, you could see some like really good individual performances. Like, you know, for instance, Jalen Davis didn't have an interception, but he did have a sack. You know, Suli Tamaivaina had two sacks and he had 14 total tackles. So they were really able to keep Wyoming in check. You know, this was a really back and forth battle. And the offense just was not great all afternoon long. And so, you know, I think the lingering question is, like, what are they going to do about it at this point? Are they going to go back to Myers? Are they going to stick with Jordan Love and hope it shakes out? Like, what do you think the answer is going forward?
Well, Love had three picks, so clearly he didn't play. Here's the thing, 8 of 18, three picks. And they've been bringing in Jordan Love in occasionally throughout the game. It's not like it's a one-time, oh, bring him in because Myers isn't playing well. He's been playing snaps consistently since basically every game, I believe. Mm-hmm. He's been playing quite a bit. Here's the thing. The running game, I guess it's okay with LaJuan Hunt, so that helps. It's not great, but it's okay. I don't know what to do with Kent Myers. He's an experienced quarterback who should be playing better than what he is. And that's it's hard to say. He's a senior. Like, remember, we talked about years ago, when he came in as a fifth-string quarterback and went like 4-1 when Utah State had a million injuries to like Daryl Garrettson, Chucky Keaton, and whoever else was in front of him. I think they had a million guys ahead of him. He goes in and goes like 4-1, and he's played off and on. And I don't know. It's like you want to give him a chance, and I thought they would, but they brought in Love, I believe, every game. Because remember, was it when Chucky Keaton's last year, they split time with him a ton. And last year, Myers was hurt and missed some games as well. So he's never really had a whole season to himself. And so that's kind of an issue as well, but I don't know. I'd still stick with Myers because had Love not thrown any picks, just say he had the same numbers, no touchdowns, same completion percentage, but no picks, maybe go to him. But he threw three interceptions. How can you go against keep a guy in there who has three picks?
That's a really good question.
So I don't know what they're going to do. I would say stick with Kent Myers. He was named your starter for a reason, and you haven't – think about it. You haven't really given him a chance to be the guy. You're bringing in Love every single time. It's like go back. You know Fresno with what they've been doing the past couple of years with Dave Schramm there. They're hooking quarterbacks left and right. You can't work that way and expect the guy to be good because at this point, if you're bringing the guy, it's different if he's coming in for like pregame. All right, he's going to come in for these type of situations where, you know, okay, he might come in for 5, maybe 10 snaps, like just a little bit just to try something different because – just to mix it up a little bit. So you're aware this could happen throughout the game. But this isn't that. This is, he comes in, he's going to throw and play a lot of carries. You can't, because now Meyer's like, okay, I have incomplete pass, I got sacked, or I did a bad play, I might get pulled out. It's those type of things that really hurt you, and give the guy a chance. You're not really giving him a chance. Look at all the teams this year. Look what finally, we'll get to Nevada in a second. Look what Ty Gagne's doing now, knowing he's the guy the rest of the way, from what it seems like. He's the man. He's played very well the past couple of games. When you know you're the guy, that might be why Brett Rypien's struggling, because they're bringing a Montel Cozart every other play. That can't happen. It can't work very well. So I say stick with Meyers. That's my plan. Give him a full game.
So are you saying overall that you mostly subscribe to the theory that when you have two quarterbacks, you have none?
You never have that many unless it's a running quarterback. Like if you're yes, I agree, because it's not just that, but it's just like you're not giving him a chance. And it seems like there's no set play because, like I said, if you're going to bring in a guy for a handful of carries for the Wildcat, whatever you want to call it, that's one thing. But they're not doing that. They're bringing them in to fix the game, and it's not fixing anything.
I mean, I think one thing to maybe watch for, and maybe we can talk a little bit further when we get into next week's preview, is that it seemed like, at least in this game, Meyers was most successful when he was hooking up with Dax Raymond, who, if I'm not mistaken, this game was probably his best performance of the year so far. And, you know, 5 catches, 72 yards may not look like much, but he did lead the team in targets as well. They ended up throwing to him 9 times, both Meyers and Love combined. Maybe, you know, that's an element that this offense really needs as a tight end who knows how to stretch the field a little bit, because Meyers really didn't find any chunk plays down the field. He didn't create any plays beyond those completions to Raymond.
Like, even Tarver had 1 for 3. That's it. And he should be your big play guy, your big receiver.
Yeah, so maybe that's something to watch going forward, because if Utah State has a weapon at tight end, like, how many other tight ends in the conference besides maybe Jake Rowe can you think of that have made a really big difference in any offense so far?
David Wells, San Diego State.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And Wyatt Demps, is he a tight end with Nevada, I think? Is he officially a tight end, or is he a receiver?
He's a receiver.
Okay, maybe it's a good advice I'm thinking of. But you're right, there's not
many. It's a relatively rare asset that Utah State has on its hands. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to get him more work down the field.
Yeah, really quick, here's what he's done all season. He didn't play versus Wisconsin. He's had Wake Forest was his worst game where he played 1 for 8. Every other game he's had 45 or more yards and at least 2 receptions.
So he's been steady.
Yeah, he's been steady, like 56, 47, 57, 45, 72. Past 2 games were his best receiving-wise was 6 and 5 receptions each. Mm-hmm. And he's averaging well over 10 yards per reception. About 4, looks like a conference play, about 12 over season. Okay, season, here it is, 13 and a half yards per catch.
Okay.
You don't want to give him too many more passes, but he is the consistent receiver on this team. When he gets 3 to 5 catches per game, he's going to get you. That's what he's going to get you, 3 to 5 and about 50 yards. That's solid. It's good for a tight end. And occasionally he'll fall on the end zone. He has 1 versus BYU, but that's about it. So, but they have the way they're playing this offense, you're right. Like, they want to spread it out. You can't, if you have a tight end who can cover the middle of the field, get something mid range like he is, 10 to 14 yards, you got to use him. Maybe get him a couple more passes that way. It's just, there's no fix for the offense. I think that fix for the offense is the quarterback, because running game, it's okay. Like, if they're going to stick with Hunt, 70-something yards is okay. You know, Meyers will get a few yards in the ground. Maybe Allen should get maybe at least 5 carries a game or 5 touches. But I think it's all the quarterback play when you're switching around. And in this offense where you're going to throw that much, it's hard for receivers to come in where you're Love's in, Meyers in. Love Meyers, where you get handful of throws here or there. But I think it comes down to the quarterback, and give Meyers a chance to play it out. He didn't turn the ball over, so why is he getting pulled?
That's a good question.
All right, so let's move on. Next game. I closed on my tabs here. New Mexico. Let's go to New Mexico, Fresno State. Oh, boy. You want to start us out with this one?
Well, I guess we should probably start by mentioning that Fresno State rolled the Lobos 38-0. Really remarkable in a lot of respects.
It is. They held New Mexico to 109 total rushing yards.
More importantly, they held them under 3 yards a carry for the first time in 2 years.
Wow. That's pretty
good. Or rather, the last time that anybody had held New Mexico under 3 yards a carry was 2 years ago.
Who was that? Do you have that offhand?
If I remember correctly, I didn't write it in the recap that I wrote, but I'm pretty sure it was Air Force that managed to do that.
Under 3 yards per carry, you said?
Yeah.
I got it right. 2015, it was...
Utah State.
Yeah, Utah State, 2015, 132 yards. This 108 yards is the fewest since probably Bob Davey took over. Because 2013, oh, sorry, I'm just bored podcast here, 2012. This is the fewest yards they had since they played Texas Tech 2012, where they lost 49-14 and gained only 84 yards.
Kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah, first time in 5 years. And they don't go under 200 yards very often either, because really quick, looking at that year, this is nuts. I think that's Bob Davey's first year, 2012. Yeah, it has to be. 2012. They rushed for over 300 yards, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of their 12 games.
Yeah, so I mean, like...
big deal. You know,
the stat sheet doesn't necessarily blow you away. Like, the Lobos only ran it 37 times. The Bulldogs only had 5 tackles for loss. But the most important thing is that they didn't really find any explosive plays on the ground. Like, they had one 14-yard run in the first quarter from Darrell Chestnut and, you know, a 10-yard quarterback scramble from Takava Tuioti in the third quarter. And that was it. Like, it's really hard to be disciplined against this option offense. And the defense, which, you know, I had written down that I didn't know exactly how good the run defense was. Like, it was a really remarkable job that these guys did up front, especially in the front seven. You know, we're talking about guys like Jeffrey Allison, who very quietly is having a very good year, you know, and they continued to force fumbles or force opportunities, create turnovers and stuff. You know, they had, I believe, one interception off a tip drill, which, at least anecdotally, it seems like they've been, like, exceedingly good at at grabbing those tip drill interceptions. But, you know, they also forced a fumble. I believe it was James Bailey who forced it and Mike Bell who recovered it. Like, this defense is, you know, light years better than it was last year. And it wasn't even that bad if you really dug into the numbers last year. A lot of what obscured last year's production is because the offense was so bad. But you're kind of seeing what these guys can do with an offense that can actually move the ball on occasion.
Yeah, last year, no, it's interesting. On a yards per play basis, their defense last year is better. Or no, sorry, 5.72. No, I'm sorry, I was looking at it wrong. Sorry. Yeah, they're giving up under 5 yards per play. Last year, 5.7. But you're right. Like, the offense, I guess this is the exception to the rule with a grad transfer QB playing well. With Marcus McMarion, what do you go? 299. On 13 completions, mind you, 299 and 3 touchdowns. 2 receivers over 100 yards. 270 yards plus yard plays, at least 5 over 22 yards or more. He was going downfield a lot.
Yeah, and if you look at the highlights, you know, there was a 70-yard touchdown to Jameer Jordan where I think the nearest defender was like 5 or 6 yards behind Jordan. Like, he just basically ran a post or something like that and was just open for days. And then, you know, he had a similar kind of throw to Keyshawn Johnson that was nearly a touchdown, except he ended up stepping out of bounds. Very next play, though, you know, he ends up one-handing it in the corner of the end zone. And it was, if I'm not mistaken, I didn't actually watch yesterday's Sports Center, but I think it was actually number 2 in the top 10.
There you go.
So, you know, he was finding receivers down the field. And this was, you know, to me, kind of like the Nevada game, kind of like the San Jose State game. He wasn't perfect, but, you know, he was... in that first half, I'm trying to look at the numbers real quick. In the first half, he was 10 of 13, 216 yards. So while there are some things I think that he still needs to work on, you know, because for instance, he wasn't nearly as good in the second half. It's just that New Mexico wasn't really able to do anything offensively, but he was only 3 of 10 for 83 yards. So yeah, they were able to find some plays down the field, just not terribly accurate. And interestingly enough, he didn't convert a single third down through the air.
Huh.
Like, on the game, I think they were, what were they? They were 4 of 13. But they didn't complete a single passing third down. So, while the big plays do mask that a little bit, it is something to keep an eye on going forward. But overall, kind of hard to argue with the results.
No kidding. Like, nobody thought this would happen. Like, you and me, I think I predicted one win in the preseason for Fresno State, maybe 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're just that awful last year. Like, we knew they had some good receivers, and you were kind of mentioned secondary should be a bit better, but the running game is getting better. And what's up with, oh, never mind. Sorry, I was thinking of this receiver, not a running back. So really quick, the running game, really quick, before I get to my thought, is Ronnie Rivers, he okay, or are they just spreading it out to give it to Hokit or Mims more carries just because they're actually being better than Rivers? Or what's
Rivers,
the deal with that?
Rivers got banged up on a punt return. I believe it was in the third quarter, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, they were already up pretty big, so, you know, you could maybe question why he was still out there returning punts, but, you know, he got nicked up. As far as I know, his status is still kind of up in the air going forward. But I think if you can be encouraged by anything, it's the fact that the running game was more consistent for 60 minutes than it had been in pretty much any game this year. Yeah, and a lot of that credit goes to guys like Josh Hokit and Jordan Mims, who were pretty able to, you know, they were able to effectively salt the game away late. You know, they Hokit ended up leading the team with 70 yards. Mims added another 65. And McMarion had his own 57-yard run for good measure. So, you know, that's a credit, I think, to how balanced this offense wanted to be in what it can do against a defense that, you know, looked pretty good a couple weeks ago against Tulsa. But now there might be some questions that are still lingering.
Wait, did you see how many points Tulsa put up this weekend?
I did not.
Hold on. I mean, I think they put up like 40-plus points or somehow. After getting shut out for however many weeks. They beat Houston 45-17.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I saw the score. I'm like, how is that possible? Because Houston's pretty good and Tulsa's offense has not been good. So,
but, you know, on the flip side, I guess I can understand why the Lobos would want to turn to Tuioti once they were down 21-0. But, you know, he didn't exactly cover himself in glory. Like, he had 200 yards, yes. He was 13 of 24. But, you know, the switch at quarterback just never really made that much of a difference.
Yeah, it's not like the New Mexico State game where he came in and helped lead them back to a near victory.
Yeah.
So what's up with that? So we got New Mexico, a lot of quarterback situation going on. Jordan didn't run the ball well. He only had 4 carries, no yards overall. I guess 4 long, but didn't throw the ball well. Are they going to stick with Jordan, because he did, when they brought in the backup, Tuioti, he did throw for 200 yards, pretty good percentage, but had a pick. Like, they couldn't get down the field for touchdowns.
Yeah, like, they did have some moments where they had, you know, some success. You know, Tuioti ended up having all 5 of the plays over 15 plus yards, and they weren't like just barely 15 yards either. Like, he had a 44-yard completion to Delane Hart Johnson. He had a 36-yard completion to Q Drennan that was, you know, to me, probably as good as the catches that Johnson made in the end zone on the other end. So they had some success. He was just really erratic. Like, it was either they were getting all or nothing, essentially, which, you know, when you look at the fact they were only 2 of 14 on third downs, you know, the same thing I said about McMarion not being able to convert third downs, Tuioti didn't either. Like, he only had 1 completion that went for a first down, and that was in the fourth quarter when the game was basically already out of reach. So, you know, both of these teams kind of had similar problems coming in. For one team, though, because they were so productive on first and second down, it didn't matter.
All right, let me ask you this, because we're pretty much the game, we're wrapped up talking about the game. So when I do my quarterback rankings this week, where should I put McMarion, you think?
I think that's a really good question, because, you know, now he's got three starts under his belt. And if you look at what he's done, at least by quarterback rating, he's number 1 in the conference now.
Overall or in conference play?
In conference. Well, no, actually overall. Like, it's because it's 75% of the team's games and a minimum of 15 pass attempts per game. So I don't think he qualified last week, but he qualifies now.
Okay,
I
see it now.
And he's
yeah.
just barely better than Nick Stevens. I mean, I think you could probably keep Stevens at number 1. We'll talk about him in a moment. Mm-hmm. But I think he's probably got to be top 3.
I guess you were ahead of him last week. I think I moved him up to 5 last week because part of it, okay, Nevada, San Jose State, not the best defenses. Mm-hmm. But and playing New Mexico, not that New Mexico's defense is anything spectacular, but he's been consistent doing it. But I would say Stevens, I would think Chapman, because I had Chapman at 2, but like I said, we'll get to his game momentarily soon in Boise State. He didn't play. He had a lot of his plate and didn't play that well. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. Aaron Worthman might move up again, but maybe number 2? Was that too much to ask for? Is he better than Drew Brown? That's probably my point where I'm probably going to stick him around Drew Brown range.
I mean, I think that he's definitely shown that he can take care of the football a little bit better than Drew Brown can.
For sure.
I think they're probably able to create explosive plays at about the same rate, you know, and looking at their completion percentage, it's basically, what am I looking at right now?
It's close.
McMarion's is a little bit better, but it's only by like a percentage point or two. And McMarion's yards per attempt, at least for the moment, is slightly better as well. So I think you could make an argument one way or the other.
The only concern I have for completion percentage is skewed a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because he went that, okay, not to discount it, but 6-7, 5-7 versus Alabama Incarnate Word.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's a little, but still, he's still at 65%. He completed 75% against Nevada. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to dip, but 65, he did Washington 10 of 16. Was he the starter that full game, or did he come in partway through?
In Washington?
Yeah.
No, he played the second half. I mean, if you want to look at it by conference play only, because they McMarion's played three games, Brown has played four. Mm-hmm. In conference play, Brown's completion percentage is slightly better. McMarion's yards per attempt is slightly better, and his touchdown to interception ratio is a little bit better as well.
Okay. All right, we'll get to that later. It'd be interesting because he's actually turned it up. And really quick, what's your confidence level of are you buying your bowl game tickets, Matt?
I will reserve judgment for now.
Hey, first place is on the line next week in San Diego.
Who would have thought, right?
Nobody would have thought. Do we have lines up for that game yet? I doubt they're out yet, but since we're still early afternoon here on Sunday. But going...
Stall for a minute and I can look it up as we have really riveting...
Let me ask you this. Are you going to try to go to that game now since it's an interesting matchup? Is there a chance you can make the drive down to Southern California?
No, I'm going to have too much on my plate.
No line yet, it looks like. I'm looking there, too, so that's okay. It'll be a good one. We'll see. We'll get those. You post those up on Twitter soon today, so we'll get those out. But if you were to guess, I would still say Aztecs probably might be like a 10-point favorite.
I think it might be a little bit closer than that.
A little closer? Okay.
I would say maybe minus 7, 7.5, something like that.
I can see that, too. I'd be, yeah, between 7 and 10 makes sense because big win for Fresno, loss for San Diego State. So it might be a little bit – they might want to – I bet him what will happen because you know how the lines work. It's like who's going to put money on. I think it'll start lower but go up because they'll want to put one fan base is excited and one is not. And so they'll stick it in that range where maybe pessimistic Aztec fans or optimistic – whatever. Like I'm thinking I think it'll get closer to 10, but I think a touchdown probably where it starts off at.
Yeah.
Should we just go into the Aztec game right now?
Let's do it.
Can I tell you I told you there would be a special teams touchdown?
You did.
I have a lot of decent calls, but the final score is not one of them. Would I predict 40-10 or something?
I think, yeah, actually.
Something ridiculous. Something ridiculous. All I can say is this, Boise State's defense showed up where they've been inconsistent the past couple of weeks. Like when they played BYU, they played well, stopping the running game, but we knew BYU's running and passing game wasn't all that great. But they stopped Pumphrey to 53 yards. And half of that came on one carry. Christian Chapman could never find his feet. And again, they list one QB hurry for Boise State. That's got to be inaccurate. Mm-hmm. Chapman was getting crushed and running for his life all night. But this is defense we saw versus three-plus quarters versus Washington State, versus Troy. Like, they came out and were just getting after everything and anything Aztecs were throwing their way, and San Diego State could never get comfortable. And before you know it, they get that kind of fluky not fluky, but just interesting looking defensive touchdown where Penny thought it was a forward pass and kind of stopped when Chapman, for some reason, didn't go down with the ball, decided to try to chuck it to Penny right there. You're down 14-0. You get the special teams touchdown. Then they score on their own Boise State fighting. Did you know it was 14-0 before Boise got a first down in this game?
I did.
That's ridiculous. I think it was it any first down or just a Boise first down? One of the two. Regardless, the offenses were not moving well in the first quarter by either side.
I mean, let's not beat around the bush. This was a tour de force by the Boise State defense. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that they held Penny to so few yards. And in the first half, especially when they were building this lead, that was really where they did their best work. Because in that first half, they ended up having four sacks. And like you said, Chapman was kind of running for his life pretty much the entire time. And they ended up having 12 tackles for loss, 10 of which came in that first half. And it was one of those things where you looked at the stat line and you're like, wait a minute. Like if you weren't someone who followed San Diego State or Boise State very closely, you might have thought it was a typo, because in the first half, you know, I don't know what it was, excluding sacks, but if you look at the raw stat line, 22 carries in the first half, 19 yards.
There is nothing going for Aztec's way. And that led to Chapman. And I said before, not to harp on him, but this kind of proves my point a little bit, that they don't have the passing attack, whether it's him or receiving, and even the offensive line not doing all that great for the most part. Like, this is not a team built where he threw 27 times. Yes, he had a pretty good at 12 completions for 240 yards. This is not an offense that built to beat you through the air. Despite him, beside, like, look at Trevlyon, 128 yards, had that very nice long touchdown pass of 89. But this team, where you had to sit, they couldn't play action, and Boise State knew they were going to throw the ball a lot because the running game wasn't working, so they abandoned play action, and there was nothing that could be done. And this is, and Boise's offense wasn't much better, really, if you think about it. Like, look at the passing game, it was terrible for Boise State.
I mean, it wasn't, I don't know if I'd say terrible, but, you know, Brett Rypien wasn't, I mean, he still didn't look like the Brett Rypien of old, because, yeah, he was 11 of 19, only 72 yards, though. And, you know, by, you know, raw yardage, it was basically even as far as total offense is concerned. But, you know, the big difference, I think, between Boise now and Boise a month ago is Alexander Mattison, who kind of looks like the guy I think we all expected him to be all along now.
Back-to-back 100-yard rushing games. He looked really good. And maybe those guys right last week, I kind of chatted or listened in with from the Statesman and Tribune up there in Idaho, saying maybe it looks like he's finally healthy. And he proved, like, this defense, like, outside of Bryce Love, they're not getting many yards against Aztec's defense. And he had 128 touchdown. They had a couple long runs. Rypien had bust off one as well. But that's their main difference. Defense picked it up after a little lull versus Virginia. And then Madison's just healthy. And that is the main difference. They just got to figure out what they're going to do with quarterback. And as I mentioned, last couple recaps, stick with one guy. I see no reason for Kozar to be in the game. I don't care. He should not be playing.
And I mean, you know, one thing that we talked about in the preview was that I thought this would be a really big moment for the linebackers. And those guys really stepped up. Like, we haven't really talked about Jabril Frazier a lot this year, but this was kind of his game. You know, he had two of those sacks in the first half that were, you know, really critical plays. You know, David Moa, who we also haven't really talked about a lot, he had a tackle and a half for loss. You know, this front seven probably played its best game, but even the guys in the secondary were hitting really hard. Like, I remember there was the one play, I think it was late in the first half, where Kakoa Nawahini had just kind of leveled the tight end. I think it was Waring who was trying to bring in a catch, and he just got rocked. And I think those are the kinds of things that really set the tone for Boise in this game. Like, they more or less out-Aztec'd the Aztecs. Yeah.
Yeah, 12 TFLs, man. Jeez. Four sacks. The Aztecs defense, like, if you look at just the defense, here's the defense is given a 14-0 hole, so they really only gave up 17 points defensively, which is fine. It's pretty good. They held the passing game in check. It's just that they couldn't stop Madison, and that's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And field position they have wasn't, like, in the first half, they mentioned that quite a bit. Field position, Boise State kept getting the ball closer and closer and closer until they finally scored the touchdown to restart the field position game.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the drive chart, you could see there's a 20-yard difference between where San Diego State was starting their own drives. On average, they were at their own 21. Boise State was starting on average from their own 41.
Okay, so let me ask you this then, because is this an aberration for San Diego State, or is this something to be concerned about going forward?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, because on the one hand, how many defenses are they going to face down the stretch that are as good as this Boise State defense has looked? You know, obviously, because obviously Fresno State has looked pretty good in the last couple weeks on defense. You know, Hawaii's not really a challenge in that regard. San Jose State has some defensive issues. Nevada has some defensive issues.
Who's their other Mountain Division opponent?
So, New Mexico.
So I'm going to say no, then?
I mean, we kind of knew all along, I think, without having to actively say it, that, you know, this isn't a team that's built to play from behind.
That's what I mentioned. Yeah, the passing game. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, It's a difficult question to answer because it's hard to imagine, like, you know, if a month from now Nevada marches down the field like 80 yards for a touchdown on the first drive, how is San Diego State going to respond? I think they're still going to be able to respond by, you know, basically shoving it with Rashad Penny down their throats. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know that sounds like a cop-out, but, you know, I would kind of expect that the next time this happens that Chapman will be a little bit better than he was because, you know, let's not forget, I mean, they did put together two pretty effective scoring drives down the stretch. You know, they had the 189-yard touchdown and a 10-play, 84-yard drive that followed that one up. But, you know, on the whole, I think he was, what, seven? I think he was 7 of 16 after halftime. So while he did have those chunk plays, he just wasn't nearly accurate enough. And that hasn't always been the case in the past. Like, obviously, he, you know, had that comeback drive versus Wyoming last year. He's shown that he can put together long drives to be able to keep the Aztecs in the game. So I'm thinking that if this happens again with the defenses that they're going to play down the stretch, it probably won't go sideways as much as it did in this game.
You're right. And then looking at really quick, like third down stuff, they were, what? Oh, shoot, I just had it here a second ago. Only 5 of 16. Mm-hmm. Not very good. 1 of 3 on fourth downs. But you're right. They, over, like, I can't say outside of that, but like they didn't turn, they had one turnover, which obviously hurt them leading to points. Like, they weren't penalized very much. The main thing in this game is that Boise just shut down Penny. And like I said, Chapman's not going to go, he threw 27 times. He's not going to go 22 of 27 and get you the win. Him throwing 27 passes is way too much, particularly when they're from behind. And so that's all I can say about it. Boise forced him to throw, and Boise knew once they figured out they could stop Penny, there was no point in Aztecs doing any sort of play action or anything to have them like hesitate or fall for that trick. They knew they were going to throw so they could bring – that's the reason they had 12 TFLs, however many sacks, QB hurries. The reason they got to Chapman so often because they knew they could bring the guys. And honestly, we know the Aztec receivers aren't amazing. Like, Michael Holder's pretty good. David Wells caught one pass. But they're like guys in the secondary for Boise State. They can just play man-to-man and that's it and bring seven or eight guys and not worry about it.
There you go.
But let me ask you this, though. This is the only loss to the Aztecs. Are they eliminated from like a big money bowl game, do you think?
No. But they're going to need a lot of help. And it's hard to see where they're going to get it from. Because, I mean, at this point, you know, the AP poll has come out. And I think both UCF and South Florida presumably went up. I don't have it in front of me right now. But, you know, for example, if you want to look at those schedules for the next month real quick. Central Florida, for instance, they go at Navy.
Who lost?
Next Saturday. Still a pretty dangerous team, though.
Yeah, oh, for so, sure, yeah.
But after that, you know, they host Austin Peay, who, yeah, but, you know, they've been a pretty good FCS team, but that's probably a win. And then they travel to Southern Methodist and then host UConn. On the flip side, you know, USF, South Florida, they, if this tab will open, they go to Tulane, which might actually be a tough game, you know?
Yeah.
And then they are home versus Houston, at UConn, home versus Tulsa.
And who knows what Tulsa will be because they put up a 1,040-something points versus Houston.
So it's hard to see where there's anything other than maybe a 50-50 resolution in any of those games.
Well, also, you forgot to mention UCF and USF play each other end of the season, too.
Well, I was going to get to that. Oh, okay. Like, it kind of looks at this point, like, unless the Aztecs can get some help, like these two teams are on a collision course at this point, so they're going to have to hope that someone from the bottom half of the American can really rise up and knock one of these two teams off, or both of them, preferably. I think maybe on the flip side, though, is this also good news for Boise in Colorado State?
Yeah, really quick, before we move on to that, what ideally would like to happen, because USF and UCF could both win out, that's fine. Mm-hmm. They're in the same division. So, loser's out no matter what. So, yes, it'd be nice to get the Aztecs polling position, or maybe, like I said, we'll get to CSU, Boise, and finish these other games, but it doesn't really matter because you have to win your conference. So, if they're both undefeated at that time, which is would be good for them, obviously, 11-0, they one of them loses, okay. Then they lose on to the other half division title, they're out. So there's still a lot left to be played. Who cares if they lose to Navy or Memphis or UConn or whoever they're playing upcoming? All it really matters is that whoever wins this side, half of the division, doesn't win the title game. So it's kind of not a moot point, but it's fun to talk about it. They play this team, that team. But if you want to look at it more simplistically, one of them is going to be knocked out no matter what. There's both of them, they're basically competing against themselves.
That's true.
So South Florida, which is number, did you see this, 13 in the coaches' poll?
Yeah, whatever.
At least AP pulls them 16, which is fine, but I'm like, really, 13? They're winning. They do what they do, but you're telling me they're better than Washington State? No. They better than Notre Dame? Maybe. Michigan? It's so, oh, geez. But who's – so let's get to your point. CSU, Boise, because they each have two losses right now.
Mm-hmm.
Boise's lost to Washington State. Is Virginia ranked, or are they nowhere near the rankings?
They are not ranked.
They're getting points, it looks like. They're right above San Diego State for points, at least in the coaches' poll.
Yeah, they're below San Diego State in the AP poll, however.
Okay. So part of it with Aztecs, really quick, this is the best – if they could have any loss, this is the only loss they could afford in conference play.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be considered a quality – whatever you want to say, quality loss. So a loss that gets a team that's going to a bowl game. And we know how the committee works, even though how flawed it is, by saying if you're a bowl team or not a bowl team, it's better to lose to a bowl team than not, whether you're 6-6 or 12-0. Doesn't matter. Similar as it is if it's 5-7, 0-12. So a loss that gets a team that's not bowling. But this does help CSU, Colorado State, or be it Boise, CSU, because you're right. They play each other. Winner of that game, if you win the conference, this is where your point comes more into play. If both these teams are 10-2, or whichever one, the winner between them is 10-2, facing San Diego State, maybe they're both ranked. I could see it being a possibility if Aztecs are 11-1 and CSU or Boise are 10-2 are both ranked because they're all getting points in the polls. It might be a 20-25 ranking situation. They win. This may not be high enough to get them ahead, but this is where we need the American champ to have at least one loss.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also worth keeping in mind too. Like, obviously, we don't know what the playoff rankings are going to look like at this point.
Halloween.
But if you want to judge it by the AP top 25, yes, San Diego State did drop out. But chances are, if they beat Fresno State next week, they're going to be right back in it.
You because think so?
they only fell to 26th, essentially. Like
they're they're that close. Oh, I didn't
know
the
first
that.
Team. They're the first team listed in the AP poll as far as others receiving votes, and they're still the only Mountain West team receiving any kind of votes. So while the American does have the inside track because they do have three teams in the top 25 now: South Florida, Central Florida, and Memphis in at number 25. They have the inside track, but you know it's going to be a little bit messy to see things, how they come down the stretch. You know, Memphis, I think, maybe has a little bit more of a perilous route going forward. You know, they're at Houston, home versus Tulane, at Tulsa, home versus SMU, and then home versus East Carolina. So there's some, you know, they've shown the ability to disappear at times because obviously they got blasted by Central Florida. They looked pretty good against Navy this past week, but I don't know that there is any sure thing in the American at this point. They're going to need help one way or another, though.
Well, I think the only teams that don't – no, actually, they don't. I don't think they need help at all because if Memphis wins out, they're going to be – would you – okay, let's play this game real quick. We've got other games to do, but this is always interesting. Memphis wins out, they're 12-1. They're beating most likely maybe a 12-0 – well, I guess South Florida has one less game, but – either a zero loss or one loss South Florida, Central Florida team, would you put that above San Diego State if they're 12-1 and Memphis is 12-1?
That is a really good question.
Because it'd come down to looking at UCLA, Stanford, maybe Navy, Arizona State, something in those range, that range. So, that game got rescheduled. Sorry, UCF. But that, I think that could be a good matchup. They'll be right there. And one thing that we know in the poll, these coaches, AP poll, if you're ahead of a team, odds of you getting jumped are very slim. But here's the thing it'll come down to. San Diego State, because they have one loss, will still consider them the favorite over the Mountain Division teams because they have two losses. Let's just say like my thing comes out where Aztecs are ranked 20. They play, say it's a rematch versus Boise State, and Boise State's 22. But if they're playing, as we've seen, South Florida's top 15 team, they're undefeated, they might be top 10. it could be like a 20-10 matchup. Memphis beats a top 10 team, they're going to be ahead of San Diego State. Right?
Yeah.
So we need what, chaos in American, I guess? Is that what we're hinting at?
More or less. We're looking at you, UConn.
Come on, Cincinnati, East Carolina.
No, Cincinnati's trash. They had their chance already.
Navy to win the division? That could still happen.
Yeah, exactly. I think maybe if we're rooting for one team, we're rooting for Navy.
And maybe Houston. Houston as well. They've been interesting. But to win the division, yeah, I think it could be Navy. Because, again, it's going to be UCF or USF on the other side. And Navy's such a tough team to go against. Yeah, I'd say Navy or Houston. Because Houston has just a one loss. SMU's not as good as we thought. But, so, yeah, I think Navy's the best chance because an 11-1 Navy or 12-1 Navy, it'll have the same scenario last year. What happens if they lose to Army or something, that type of thing last year, because they're going to make the picks before then. But I think you're right. I think Navy's the best chance to knock off South Florida or Central Florida.
I guess we'll find out.
Well, they play next week, too, so Central Florida Navy. There we go.
And by the way, in case anybody's wondering, yes, even though San Diego State lost, I'm probably still going to do that weekly thing. Maybe not specifically for San Diego State fans at this point, but maybe open it up to Boise State and Colorado State fans. So if you're looking for games to keep an eye on this coming week for week 8, be on the lookout for that later this week.
Yeah, it's a good idea, Boise. And the thing is, they're probably the same games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's not going to be too much of a difference. So, yeah, we'll open it up to maybe the playoff viewing guide or something, new, whatever, G5, whatever you want to do. Some sort of viewing guide for the Mountain West to get to the winning bowl game.
And by the way, if you followed my guide last week, I told you to watch Clemson lose to Syracuse.
You did. I did not heed to that advice. It also didn't help. I worked late and I could have watched it. I see, fourth quarter, let's find a radio station and listen on my drive home, and pleasantly surprised. All right, so we finished our game. So I guess we got a couple more games to talk about.
Yeah.
We have Nevada, Colorado State. Can I say I'm right? Can Ty Kate? Do I need to give Norvell my phone number to tell him to start Ty Ganji or give him the DeLorean to go back in time to not bench him at all?
I mean, if you ever have funding to be able to build such a machine, I don't see why not.
I'd probably do something better, but still.
But
maybe
I think,
a pit stop.
But I think Ganji's numbers kind of speak for themselves. And there was one thing that you mentioned in our preview was watch out for big plays in this game. And the name of the game, at least for Nevada on offense, was big plays. And they almost pulled off an upset.
Yes, at least 6 plays over 20 yards in a passing game. At least 6. There could be more. I'm just looking at the long plays. But the other chance is, like, I'm watching Boise, San Diego State, because, well, that's the better game, you'd think. Then I'm like, oh, halftime? Let's switch over. When Aztecs are down big, I see, okay, it's a 28-21 to half. All right. Nevada scores 21 points that third quarter. But you mentioned this, the secondary for Colorado State is not terribly impressive.
Well, I mean, yes and no, because on the one hand, you know, Ganji was only 23 of 40, which isn't a great completion percentage. I think he was a little better than that last week against, who were they playing last week, San Jose?
Yeah, San Jose, yeah.
So he was a little better than that last week. But when you're throwing for 428 yards, and when you're
when
you allow not one but two plays from other passers, like, did you happen to see the halfback pass that Kelton Moore threw in this game?
I did not see that one. I'm gonna compile our highlights later today, but I missed that play.
I'm not gonna lie, that was a beautiful play.
Better than Utah State's wide receiver pass.
I think so. Yeah.
Ooh, I better find it soon. All right.
Yeah, it was a 57-yard touchdown to McLean Mannix, who, by the way, might just be the nation's best freshman receiver at this point. You know, 7 catches, 150 yards, and a touchdown. You know, I think he's pretty much established himself as the guy in this Nevada offense.
You're correct. Yeah, looking at what he's done, he's been very consistent. Only every game but 2 had 6 or more receptions. He's tearing it up. Touchdown in every game except for Washington State, where... Well, it's Washington State. Yeah, he could be freshman All-American alert. That's what we're calling for him. That's what he's going to be. Running game, like Nevada, what the heck happened? Last week they rushed the ball very well. This week, nothing. Which the Rams' rushing defense is quite good. But, man, 31 for 56, that's I'm surprised they're that close in this game, but I guess with this air raid attack, or was it, what's the official name? Pack Attack? Is that what it was?
Pack Attack, yeah.
We wanted Air Wolf, but they went with Pack Attack.
Well, but I mean, I think that
it's tough.
You know, some of it, I think they were mentioning on the broadcast, had to do with the fact that they were really getting their depth tested at running back. Like, they had, you know, if you look at the box score, one carry from a true freshman named Russell Booz, which, by the way, great name. But, you know, I think that kind of thing is reflective of the fact that, you know, more, you know, yeah, he had his long touchdown pass, but they didn't really have a running game again to speak of, which put a lot on Ganji's shoulders. And I don't know that's necessarily something they want to do. You know, I think they want to have some semblance of a passing game, of a running game. I don't think they want to be the kind of team that only averages 2 yards per carry, which is pretty much what this offense was able to do last night against the Rams.
So, you know what's unfortunate about this game?
What's that?
College kickers are not accurate at all. Nevada.
Do we want to talk about that?
Colorado State gets a go-ahead touchdown, 44-42. On, was it, took a pretty long drive, took most part of the way into the fourth quarter. Well, some of the fourth quarter. Nevada gets the ball. All right, 12 minutes left. Let's go. 12 plays, 57 yards. They're pulling the Boise State versus BYU last week. Let's run as many plays as possible, as much time we want, off the clock. Because the Rams defense, quick strike. 26-yard pass to Mannix. They run down the field. Ganji rushes for a yard. Pass, run, whatever. Fourth and one at the 18. You're down by two. Well, you're going to kick it, of course, right?
Do you think that was the right decision?
They're moving pretty well, so maybe not. But, yeah, I say yes because look at the running stats. They couldn't run the ball regardless because, well, they had first and 10. If you look at the whole game, probably not. But if you look at the plays before, because they already went for them fourth down before, because here's what they did on this drive really quick. They actually ran the ball quite well if you look a little bit deeper. They had a third and 15. That was a pass, obviously. That was a big conversion there. But oh, no, sorry. I'm looking at the wrong score. Sorry. I'm going too far up on my chart here. Let me go back to the right one. That was a drive before. Third and one, they get the first down, running the ball, two-yard gain. Third and one, no gain with Hamilton running the ball. Fourth and one, Ganji gets the 2 yards. Then they go 5-yard run, 4-yard run. No gain from Kelton Moore on third and one. Thinking about it now, maybe they should have gone for it because on that drive, that's probably their best rushing drive of the whole game.
Yeah, because I went back to look through the play-by-play to see if they had any other kinds of, or what they were doing on third and short, you know, previously in this game. And what I noticed is that they didn't really have very many third and shorts in this game.
Until then?
Yeah, like they had a third and two in the third quarter when they were down 7. That was an incomplete pass, and they ended up just punting it away. But, you know, to your point, like, they had converted on third and short twice already, or a third and short, rather, and then a fourth and one on that drive. Mm-hmm. So to me, I almost wish that they had just decided to go for it, kind of, you know, no guts, no glory kind of thing, especially since, you know, they ended up, rather, Wyatt Bryan ended up missing the ensuing field goal anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of wish, like, you're on the road, you need 1 yard to go, and even if your offense has been scuffling on the ground, like, you've had some success in converting those tries. So, I mean, personally, I would have liked to see them do it, and I wish that I had the numbers in front of me as to, like, how their numbers have broken down as far as being able to convert third downs, because, like, on the season, they're right in the middle of the pack as far as converting third downs on offense. They're 7th in the conference, right around 38%. But, you know, I think if it were me, I probably would have gone for it, kind of knowing what was at stake, you know, knowing that, you know, do you really want to put too much in Ganji's shoulders? Just ask your guy to get 1 yard.
And this was on the road as well, correct? At CSU?
Yes. So actually, okay. I went back and I looked it up. So what they've done so far this year in third and short, which is, you know, 1 yard to 3 yards to go, 17 attempts, 15 yards, and only 7 first downs. And on fourth down, you know, they've had 9 attempts and they've actually on average gone backwards. You know, they have 3 first downs, but they've averaged almost basically minus 1 yards in those attempts. So maybe, you know, knowing that little bit of context, like, yes, the decision to go for it makes more sense, or to go for the field goal rather. I don't know. I mean, if you know, it's easy for me to say as a bystander, as someone who, you know, if I were playing NCAA football, for instance, I probably would have just gone for it.
You never punt, right? That game's never.
No, well, I mean, I punt, but you know, he didn't miss. Oh, here's the other thing. Okay. He didn't miss by much, too. Pettit ended up hitting the upright, so this is a matter of inches, one way or another. You know, if he actually makes that field goal, if it's like 1 foot more to the left, we're not having this conversation, you know, because Nevada's up 1 at that point. And then if CSU has to rally and they ended up missing that field goal in another situation anyway, we're having, you know, we're talking about, you know, Taiganji rallying this team all the way back and all that kind of stuff. So I guess I could kind of see it both ways, that they haven't really been successful running the ball short yardage situations, but I kind of wish that they had given it a shot.
So with this game, had it been here, as we were chatting about this, here's my thinking why they went for the field goal. You're down 2.
Yes.
If you don't get it and they score a touchdown, you're down 9, most likely. Mm-hmm. Had this been a 1-point game, they would have gone for it. Because if CSU goes down and gets a touchdown, if you don't get it, you could still theoretically tie the game on a 2-point conversion. Maybe they brought up the little number chart, say, what should we do here in this situation with how much time left? Because it's not like the game was over. If they miss it, there's each team still had another possession.
Yeah, there was still 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, so had you miss it and it'd been a 1-point game, there's still time. Say the Rams score fairly quickly, or they did the same thing, same drive. They went 7 plays, but they go for a touchdown instead. That still gave you 2-plus minutes left in the game. And I'm just saying, maybe it was a point thing. You're down 2 because if you know if you miss it, they get a touchdown, the game's essentially over. You're down 2 possessions because extra points, odds of missing that are pretty slim. So, I mean, I don't know, but you're right. You're on the road. You ran the ball well on that drive. Go for it. You need 1 yard. Go under center and just push it forward.
Yeah, and I mean, a small part of me can't help but wonder, like, you've already gained over 500 yards of total offense by this point.
You can get one more, right?
What's one more? Yeah. You know, on the flip side, can we talk about Michael Gallup for a moment?
You mean 200-yard receiver Michael Gallup?
Yeah, do you remember when we had this conversation in the recap and I was talking about whether they were going to stop him and you said no?
I was correct. 13 for 263, 3 touchdowns. So who's player of the week? Him or Arian Worthman?
That's a really good question.
Why not Nick Stevens? I don't know.
That's true, too. I mean, I thought it would be the Nick Stevens show, and so I'll take credit for that. He was 26 of 37, 384 yards and 4 touchdowns. But, I mean, I don't know, because Gallup was, if I remember correctly, I think it was Rich Kurtzman had mentioned that he was 2 yards short of the school record for receiving yards. Yeah, and I had seen on Twitter that Rich Kurtzman, I believe, said that Gallup ended up 2 yards shy of the school record for receiving yards. You know, 263 yards, 3 touchdowns on 13 catches. You know, and we've already talked about a couple of highlight-worthy catches that were made. Like, there was a GIF, I think it was Matt Stevens posted it, where Gallup had, like, a really tough catch over a defender on the sideline or something like that, falling backwards. Did you happen to see that?
I must have missed it. I need to go find it.
It was a really good catch. He's just really good.
He is. It's like
he's fun to watch.
Yeah, he catches the ball. He muscles. He's probably better than Rashard Higgins, right?
Is that sacrilege in Fort Collins? I don't know.
Why not have two Blitnikoff finals potentially in your midst? Why not?
That's true. Why not?
If you look nationally, like, no, he's a beast. Like, CU game notwithstanding with the questionable offensive PI calls, but he's a guy, when you look at what he's doing overall in the nation, like, he's crushing it. Nobody, like, who's really that much better than him? I'm trying to pull it up really quick. He's number 2 in yards per game. He has 5 touchdowns, which is, I know you got David Sills of West Virginia who has 12, which is ridiculous, or Anthony Miller of Memphis, but, like, what he can do overall, like, yards per game, number 2, he catches everything in his path that comes. He has almost 1,000 yards. He's leading the nation in receiving yards total. 59 receptions is top, what, three? Number two. He's basically the best, almost the best receiver overall when you look at a couple stats. He does it all. Well, I guess
he's pretty good.
Well, maybe he doesn't do it all, but he, as for receiver catching, receiving, touchdowns, he does what he wants essentially. And do we need to move on to the final game really quick after Hawaii, the late game nobody could watch?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, you know, in the preview show, I guess we're all sorts of right in the preview show. We're kind of getting better at this thing, kind of.
Maybe.
Because we look at I'm starting to think Coach Brett Brennan is using the Utah State approach of not changing the depth chart ever. Because we looked on there, we saw quarterback Josh Love, right, as the number one starter. Number one. Mm-hmm. Well, when we had our San Jose State writer Anna over there, availability, like, who's going to step up this week? No mention. First off, the ridiculous update of Montel Aaron. Oh, he's running around out there. We'll see. I'm like, come on, coach. Second-wise, he mentioned zero of Josh Allen about the quarterback situation of players who could step up. He mentioned Aaron. I think he mentioned Sam Allen as well, I believe. Love did play, mind you, 4-6, but Aaron got the start. 17-27, very good game. 322, a couple touchdowns, a pick. Ended up losing to Hawaii, but he outplayed Drew Brown by quite a bit.
You think so?
Yeah, Brown was under 50% passing.
He was actually right.
Sorry. Only had one touchdown, didn't throw for 200 yards. This is a Dice May St. Juice show again. Another 200-yard rushing attack for him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Drew Brown didn't really need to do too much because St. Juice was so good. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, we're talking about guys who are, you know, Mountain West Offensive Player of the Week worthy. He's another guy, you know, he was basically the offense in this game, especially since, if I'm not mistaken, John Ursua left the game because of an injury. You know, so, you know, losing him, I think, obviously hurt the passing game. You know, he only ended up with 170 yards, but you know, more importantly, they weren't able to, you know, pick up chunk yardage in the same way that they had been. You know, Drew Brown ended up only having, I think, three plays over 15 yards. One of them was his only touchdown of the evening. But, you know, I think on the one hand, yes, this is probably the best offensive performance that San Jose State has had all year long. You know, by total offense, it was definitely their best. They were over 500 yards total offense. They were, I believe, a little over 7 yards per play. So those are good things. But Hawaii's defense, you know, for one, finally showed up. Because, yes, Aaron was pretty good, but they did sack him 4 times. You know, they did force... Did they force any interception? Yeah, they forced one interception. And they forced, I believe, 2 turnovers total. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, like, this was probably their most disciplined game of the year, too. Like, they only had 7 penalties.
Only 7 penalties.
Only 7 penalties.
Well, look at San Jose real quick. 11 for 104 penalties. Jeez.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could see Hawaii start to make progress in the ways that we started talking about last week in last week's preview. Like, it wasn't pretty, but they got the job done. Like, you know, San Jose still managed to rack up like 200 yards in the second half. But here's a telling stat for you. Do you know how many rushing yards they had in the second half?
Which team?
The Spartans.
100.
Zero.
Zero.
They had 294 yards of total offense after halftime, all through the air.
Doesn't mean they didn't try to rush the ball, right?
They had 11 carries for 0 yards.
Wow.
And they also turned the ball over 3 times, too. So while, yeah, Aaron had, you know, had his moments, they were able to kind of pick up. You know, they actually had a lot of big plays. I think it was probably their best performance of the year in that regard. You know, they ended up having 10 plays of more than 15 yards. And, you know, again, Tyler Nevins had a pretty decent game, you know, 84 yards on 22 carries. But turnovers killed this team again. And I don't know that there's any easy answer for that, but it's to Hawaii's credit, rather, that they were able to take advantage of that.
And Hawaii came from behind. They didn't score in the first quarter. They were down 10-0 at one point, and they made a comeback. That's part of it, too. Like, San Jose State took advantage of a fumble early on, a field goal, and a 3-and-out as well to get that quick 10-0 lead. But then Hawaii goes on a massive drive and scores again. But, yeah, up 10-0. Like, San Jose State, yeah, they had big leads. It's kind of going back to South Florida. When they get ahead, I know it's super early first quarter, where they got ahead, but it's like they get leads, but they when they do get them, which rare they seem to be, they don't seem to be able to hold on to that or take advantage of any lead. Like, they can't trust their defense at all. This is an offense where I'm thinking if they're going to win any games this year against an FBS team, they're going to somehow outscore anybody, and I don't know who they're going to beat because Fresno looks way better. They've already lost to Nevada. Maybe UNLV because their defense they're lost to UNLV. Sorry. They got crushed. Maybe not. They got BYU. I don't know. Maybe they can beat BYU. But
maybe
I'll be at the game, but they're going to go 1-12, I think. Or they play 13 games?
Yes.
They're going to win one game because they go to BYU next 2 weeks. They have a week off, but they got San Diego State, no. At Nevada, you never know. Maybe Nevada has turned a corner a little bit, but at CSU, no. Home versus Wyoming, I'm not confident in any sort of victory at all for them down the rest of the way at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the name of this game, like I kind of mentioned in the recap, is like you just want to see them do something on offense. And so in that regard, I think the game can be characterized as a success. But, you know, there are certain things that they're going to have to work on. Like, they weren't great on third downs. Like, Hawaii had a pretty significant advantage as far as being able to just keep moving the chains. They were 10 of 15, where San Jose State was only 6 of 15. But more importantly, like, they put themselves in a lot of third and long situations, and they were 0 of 5 when they had to get more than 9 yards, which probably isn't a huge surprise, but you don't want to put yourself in that many positions when you're an offense that's still trying to grow. So, yeah, Aaron had his moments. He had a pretty decent game. Like, we know they still have a running back who's, you know, pretty decent. And they have some targets that they can build around, but the defense is probably going to hold them back more often than not this year.
All right. Is there anything else to add? Like, Hawaii look any better? Anything you want to add about the Warriors team at all?
I mean, I think it's a credit to them that they were able to cut down on the kind of self-inflicted mistakes.
Barely.
But it's going to be interesting to see, like, if Ursua is out for any extended period of time, you know, what is that going to do for this offense? Because if I'm not mistaken, I believe they're off next week. And then they host San Diego State 2 weeks from now.
Oh, boy.
Before heading to UNLV. So it's not the easiest stretch in the world. But we'll see if they have someone who can step up and replace Ursua's production. Because Brown was fine, but he wasn't nearly as explosive as he was with Ursua in the lineup. So that's something worth keeping an eye on.
Interesting. Really quick, we're about to wrap this up. We have our first line of the Aztec Fresno State game.
Okay, what is it?
You don't want to take a guess, or does your guess still stand at 7.5?
7.5.
You're incorrect. 11.5 at the moment.
Okay, I guess I could see that.
And the other line I could find really quick, Boise versus Wyoming. Right now it's 14.5 Boise State.
Next week's going to be a really fun week.
We'll get to all that next week, but I just saw two. I was looking for other lines while you're chatting, but that's the only two I could find at the moment. But we'll get those posted for as soon as they come across our secret website we use that everybody knows about.
Yeah.
Whatever. Hold on really quick. UNLV, Utah State. Let's see if that's up really quick, as this is riveting. Okay, it's up. Do you want to take a quick gander? Utah State at UNLV, what the line is at UNLV?
I'm going to say UNLV -3.
Bingo, you're correct. Field goal.
Boom.
Start at 2.5, but apparently somebody puts a few bucks on the Rebels, so there you go. All right, so I think we're good. This is our week 7. I'm getting ahead of myself. Week 7 wrap-up show. A lot of craziness happened. Even though the Aztecs lost, it's okay. Relax, Aztec fans. You'll be okay. Boise State still played very good defensive game, probably their best of the year to the moment. But they're still now. This now opens up for a good CSU, Boise, San Diego State conversation to maybe the winner, as we discussed earlier, to get to the New Year's Six bowl game, perhaps. We'll see. But check out our website, mwcwire.com, Facebook, Twitter. Hey, we had a nice review on Facebook. Did you see that?
I did.
Somebody says we are knowledgeable. I'll say question mark about what we're... No, kidding. We got a nice review. An Aztec... What surprises me a little bit, it was an Aztec fan as well. A complimentary Aztec fan, because sometimes they think I hate Chris Chapman or hate the Aztecs. Not sure.
Well, they forget our motto.
Yeah, we're biased against your team, right? That's our motto. So With that, if you, I replied. I said, if you could please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or your podcast, down whatever you use your podcast app, please. If you'd like to, like we say, give us a review, tell a couple friends, and yeah, that's our show for this week. And we'll be back next week for another riveting preview of Week 8. We have, like Matt said, a bunch of good games. But as always, yes, we are biased against your team.